It actually says $6.25 per day, which I think is hilarious. I'ma frame that shit. Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we discuss grief with our guest, Eric Knight. We talk about how to grieve as an atheist and how to talk to people who are grieving when you're an atheist.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover. I'm joined, as always, by my illustrious hosts, Tim Wick.
That's me.
And my husband, Nick Glover.
Hey.
Yeah. And today, I have a really chipper tone. I'm just realizing it's probably inappropriate because we're discussing grief.
Yay!
So I'm like,
oh, I'm so offended.
Yeah. Okay, so our guest is Eric Knight.
Hi.
Yes, and
I'm Eric. Pedantic Eric.
Pedantic Eric.
Yes.
Oldville Eric. Old used up Ville Eric is spent here.
Yeah. Spent Eric.
So Eric, you're here because your dad recently died.
Mm-hmm.
And you are an atheist.
Yes.
And so we wanted to talk about how atheists deal with grief, whether it's their own or that of those around them. For my part, my cousin Celia recently lost her 10-week-old baby. Which is just awful, and just randomly too, not from any like, oh, we knew the baby was sick or anything.
Yeah.
He just died. And so my cousin Hack, who's written in before, he wrote me and said, I wonder if you guys want to talk about that because it's hard, and I know I personally have a hard time in general with grief because I. When my grandfather died, he's the only person I've really known who died. I didn't feel like I was grieving the way everyone else seemed to be. I was sad that he died, but he was old, and he had cancer, and so it wasn't really like a surprise. Everyone dies, so I guess I felt very pragmatic about the whole thing, and I think I felt bad because I felt like that was being callous, if that makes sense. But I don't know. So
like there's a societal expectation that you have to feel X amount of grief or you're not grieving enough.
Yeah, you need to say things like too soon and unfair and like it's and oh no, what a shame. And it's like at least in my grandfather's case, the only thing I didn't really feel any of that except because he was 85 and he died, he had cancer.
That's the only death I've experienced is my grandmother, my dad's mom.
Yeah.
It was like we're not close. I'm not really close to my dad's family. I didn't really know her. I felt bad, but I don't know if I'd say grief. I wasn't deeply.
And I think that's a proximity thing, though.
Yeah.
I mean, for sure. I know.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to. I don't want to be like walk us through how your dad died. I mean, just if you want to talk a little bit about what happened.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. So there's. Going into this, I wasn't sure. There's actually kind of a side subject that I think will lead me into talking about the experience with my dad.
Okay.
In that, I feel like, to a degree, my relationship with religion as an atheist, I think, is different than a lot of atheists.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And in that, I was brought up in a religious household. My dad was a minister for, 50 years. My mom was also ordained a minister of Christian education. But what I think is different than a lot of, you guys have talked about the quintessential angry atheist
kind
of stereotype.
Yeah.
And, there are a lot of people who are atheists who feel very strongly that religion is always bad. It's never done any good. It does, blah, blah, blah. And all the way down the line. And I have a very different perspective than that, because I was brought up in, yes, a religious household, but a very, I'd say fairly laid-back, non-judgmental,
kind of
liberal...
Jesus.
So the denomination I was brought up in is called the United Church of Christ. It's a congregational-based denomination. And you guys, in conversation, this may have come up before, but in particular, the UCC was the first denomination in the United States, mainstream denomination in the United States to ordain women. Oh. It was the first to ordain a gay in mm-hmm. into the ministry. It's always been a very inclusive, open and inclusive
sure.
denomination. And my parents never brought, they never brought us up with an attitude of, you know, the very dogmatic, believe this or you're going to hell, and right. all those other people are damned, and all of that
more
kind of
thing. More
about
Jesus' messages than the biblical codes.
It was grounded very much in who you want to try and be as a person.
That's a lot of my grandfather, kind of a mm-hmm. Jimmy Carter, Fred Rogers, Lutheran minister.
Sure,
and
yeah.
that's
sure.
what my mom was raised under. And
right.
That was
so, so that means that you're the type of atheist who, you're an atheist, but that's personal, and you don't really care where other people are.
Right. And
as long as they're not being harmful.
Right. And on top of that, like, they're very specific about the mission of, you know, addressing things of social justice, world hunger, world peace, and all these things are, I mean, this is very, it's not just random people here and there, but like the denomination as a whole takes those things very seriously.
Okay.
It's a big part of how they approach the whole package of religion. And so because of that, I always had a tremendous respect for the work that my parents both have done in the church mm-hmm. for years and years. And so, for instance, if I go visit my parents and they're going to church and they're like, you want to come along? I'm like, sure, I'll go. I don't care. I'll go.
Sure.
When it's time for everybody to stand up and sing a hymn, I sing a hymn because I like singing and it's part of what you're doing because you're there. And if it's time for everybody to say the Lord's Prayer, I still know it. I'll say it along with it because I don't care. It's not,
sure.
I don't see that. I'm participating in the event.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And so as part of that, then that transition into the experience with my dad, he had quadruple bypass surgery.
And he was like 79.
79
was,
years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he had quadruple bypass and came through very well.
Mm-hmm.
Initially the, you know, results and everything was very, very good. And in the next few weeks, I mean, he was in the hospital for a few days, and then he was sent home and had home care, everything that went with it. And, yeah, great. But in connection with that, the thing that ended up happening, as far as we can tell, it's hard to point exactly to, because in the stages of grief, they talk about the different stuff, the, you know, disbelief and all that. And one of them, of course, is anger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Dad has always been a workaholic.
Sure.
Okay. He ostensibly was going to retire at 65.
Yeah.
He took another job to go work at a church for a while.
So let me guess. And he did not rest the way he was supposed to rest.
Yes.
And he got sick.
And he got pneumonia, and that's what led. And the thing that we don't know, of course, is how much of what he was doing really led to that.
Sure.
You know, if he had completely taken it easy, if he had followed all the instructions.
Yeah, and you'll never know.
We'll never know. We'll never know. But in that context, it's hard. It's almost harder not knowing, because, you know, it's like, well, you feel this anger of like, well, could he still be here?
Right.
Who knows?
Well, I think that that's really typical. And I mean, Tim, when your dad died, did you guys have that anger about it? I mean, him, at the situation?
My dad died a very long time ago.
I know.
And when my dad died, I would still describe myself as a theist in that, I wasn't...
You were only 17.
I don't think I was a Christian. I was 19. But I wouldn't describe myself as a Christian at that point. I'd kind of rejected Christianity, but I hadn't rejected God.
Sure.
And I hadn't rejected the concept of an afterlife or anything like that. So, but when Dad died, he was actually on a business trip. He was in Vienna, which is one hell of a place to die.
Yeah.
And he just didn't get off the plane.
Oh, God.
We didn't know he wasn't coming home.
Oh, God, that's awful.
Because they discovered his body in the hotel. He died in his sleep, died overnight.
Oh, boy.
And so, you know, there wasn't... It's odd in that I don't think there was a lot of... I don't remember the anger. I was angry more...
You're a 19-year-old guy. I mean, that's...
I was angry because I had testosterone. But I was angry more that he was dead
sure.
than I was angry at him.
Were you angry at God? would you say, since you did believe in God at that time? Like, were you? Would you say that you felt angry at God for taking him?
I don't remember being that.
Okay.
But I probably was.
Yeah.
But my grandfather's response was, my grandfather had been initially supposed to go on that trip with my dad. So my grandfather spent the next 4 or 5 years convinced that if he'd been there,
it wouldn't have happened.
He could have done something.
Yeah. And that sounds a lot like how you guys were. If he had just rested more, this wouldn't have happened. But there's no way that in both situations, there's no way to know.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, of course.
Yeah. Because my dad had finally actually retired. But the retirement community that my parents have been living in for several years, you know, he was still very active and on boards and committees blah, blah, blah. And so
he's like
making phone calls and doing some emails on a laptop and all this kind of stuff. And, you know,
all
my mom and people are like, you know, it's like, it's not physical labor. It's not hard, you know, hard
stressful
work in a sense.
So,
but it's still.
But he's 79 years old and he just had a quadruple bypass.
Yeah,
and
he needs to lay the fuck down.
Yeah, stuff that used to be easy is not easy anymore.
My grandfather, he's still with us. He has been retired, in big neon air quotes, retired for like, I don't know, 15 years or something. He still preaches more Sundays than he doesn't.
Yeah.
By far.
So,
like guest appearances at churches, wherever they happen to
be.
But,
sure.
Yeah.
So when you, so now in this post, you know, this, you went home for the memorial and things like that. And in this, did you have a lot of people, since obviously I'm assuming the people that your parents knew and that were their community were religious, did you have a lot of people talking to you about like, oh, he's in a better place, or like, this is God's will, or any, did you get any of that?
Actually, no.
That's good.
And I don't know how much of that was the dynamic of you know, so many of them were people from the denomination.
Yeah.
There were some people there who were other random family and friends that weren't, but the overwhelming majority of people who made it to this, because he died in late May, and the memorial was just like a week and a half, two and a half weeks ago.
It was
the weekend right after Convergence.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, because that's how I time everything.
Yeah.
You know, and that was my mom very specifically wanted to take a little more time to, you know, prepare for actually having this memorial service.
Right.
That would give people more chance to plan and be able
it
to come.
Could be less raw.
And so while it was still hard, while it was still obviously emotional, it was definitely easier in some ways that you know, we'd all had a chance to process certain things and have, you know, a little time to actually kind of reflect before we got to that service.
Yeah.
You know, and have that.
My, so with Celia and her baby, you know, Hack, I was telling me, because I'm not friends with her. I don't know her very well because she's in the southern side of things. And so Hack knows her really well.
Okay.
But I guess there were a lot of, you know, oh, God has another angel. Oh, he had a reason to call him home. Like, you know, the Lord works in mysterious ways. And this may seem hard, but you just have to accept it kind of stuff. And just, I can't imagine going through that sort of loss and then also being slapped with people telling you that their way of helping you through it is, this is God's plan for you, because that just makes God sound like a fucking asshole, because like, why would God take your 10-week-old baby? That's a dick move.
Yeah.
Like,
and actually, humans and angels are different. Humans don't become angels, but angels are different classes of beings that God made.
And like, oh, well, you know, God had a reason. Well, really? What reason? Like, is that a half step away from saying, like, well, you know, you never know, your baby might have been the next Hitler.
Exactly.
You know, like,
when am I going to find out the reason? If God had a reason, did he plan on letting me know?
Well,
And
other things that, you know, I've heard, so things that people were, in high school, I knew a guy in high school. My class is very small. It was only 49 of us, and one of us is dead. And he died of an aneurysm when we were all 19. And it was very shocking and very weird. And it was in that time when you're, like, out of high school, so you're really like, I'm not going back, and I don't want anything to do with those people, because it was, you're in that rebellious phase. So I didn't know Ted super well, but that was weird. And I remember people saying, to console my friend Laura, who was very close to them, she'd been his girlfriend, don't worry, you'll get to see him again someday. Which to me, it just seems like the worst thing to say to somebody who's depressed about losing someone, to say that, like, well, when you're dead too, you get to be with them. Because, like, why would you make someone just long for their own death and not help them you know, focus on mm-hmm. life. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I feel, you know, I am, it's something that gives me a lot of anxiety, is that knowing that, you know, soon probably someone I know that very well and I'm very close to, that I not to say that I didn't love my grandfather, but it's just too distant. When you're born, you know your grandparents are going to die. That's just something that you just grow up with, and it's not the same. And knowing that having that over me, knowing that someone I love and is very close to will eventually die, and I will have to go through that, and I haven't yet. And it's one of those things where it's like, the older you get and you haven't had chicken pox, you know it's going to be so much worse when you get it. Like, you know, like, I don't know if that makes sense, but
I haven't had grief yet. Yeah, I'm going to have it someday.
Kind of.
And I don't know how to handle it.
Like, I'm kind of terrified of how it's going to happen, but I swear to God, if someone says to me that this is God's plan, like, they're going to get slapped. They're going to get slapped real hard.
Additionally, you know, because I've had a few, I mean, I've had some other people that I've known or were relatively close to die.
Oh, yeah, you're old. But,
like,
super old.
I'm old, exactly. but interesting, so my parents both came from our large families. My dad was one of seven kids, and my mom was one of nine.
Okay.
Now, so my dad was one of the youngest, and my mom was more towards the middle.
Oh, so you've had a lot of uncles.
So, well, on my dad's side, out of the seven, there are only two left now that my dad's died. Mom's family, all nine of them are still alive.
Mm.
But, I mean, they are really getting up there.
Sure.
And, I mean, you know, so I'm fully expecting, you know, I don't mean this, obviously,
we're in a safe space.
The reality, it's a safe space for everyone on the internet will be able to hear me say this. But
laugh at you.
And laugh at me.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, who knows exactly what's going to happen over the next handful of years with even more of these relatives.
Yeah.
And some of them, you know, we saw more of my mom's family growing up as kids. So these are, you know, aunts and uncles that I knew better, younger, even though I haven't seen them all that much in recent years. And so, you know, that'll be different, and it'll be, you know, in some ways a harder, you know, dynamic in that way, too, of course.
Just thinking about my grandpa and his funeral. So my family is really crazy, and I know a lot of people always say that, but I'm not even pretending. Like, it's really dangerously bad sometimes. And so when my grandpa died, my two cousins, I have two adopted cousins that are sisters and are both awful in their own way. And so my grandpa died of cancer. When my grandfather got diagnosed with his, you know, very weird, rare cancer that was going to kill him very quickly, my two uncles also got diagnosed with, not the same as my grandfather, but they had the same exceedingly rare cancer that had never been seen before in siblings that close in age, like, together. They got studied by the U and stuff, like, it was, but so they have cancer and are going through treatment. My grandpa is dead, and my cousin decides to read a poem she's written at the memorial called Cancer, and it's like, cancer, the thief in the night, it steals all you love, there is no escape from cancer. It will take you over. Like, it will ruin everything. I cry.
Chemo.
Yeah, like no hair, like weak, throwing up, still sick kind of chemo. And they're just like, to each other, like, hands around the shoulders. So then my other cousin, her sister, we're back at the house afterwards, and this is literally how she talks, and she's like, I'm the only one who didn't cry when Poppy died. Do you think that's weird? Is it weird that I'm the only one who didn't cry? We're like, yes, it's weird. You're a robot. Like, it's not. It's like, I guess that just means that my connection was different. I don't know. Like, so.
It means you have no soul.
Back to the poem. Yeah. Back to the poem cousin. The poem cousin often. Now, all of it's like, her Facebook status updates will be things like, miss you, Poppy. Love you. I know you are watching down over me. I feel your presence every day. I know I have my guardian angel. I love you so much. And I just want to be like, shut up. He didn't like you as much as he liked the rest of us. Like, because you're terrible. Just stop. Like, just, because it's not, she's not grieving. She's publicly, it's for attention. It's publicly, it's not a thing like, you know, 10 years ago today, you know, I lost my mom or something, and I miss you every day, Mom, I love you. It's not that. It's not random days, like, really feeling Poppy watching over me today as I applied for jobs, you guys. Like, just shit where it's like, okay.
When did he die?
Oh, God. It's 2006?
We were dating.
She's still talking about it?
Like, yeah. Like
Holy
that.
Shit.
Yeah.
We were dating, not engaged.
We were dating. I don't remember if we were engaged or not. I was living at my mom's.
I actually think,
Is there a statute of limitations on how often you can
be?
In a weird way, I kind of respect it more that it wasn't like this for a few months flash in the pan, I'm so grief-stricken.
Well, sure.
As opposed to just, like, I don't know, I guess, I mean, okay, yeah, deluded, sure, but if that delusion is something that she feels is, like, an inherent thing that's still there, like, okay, well...
And that's it could be totally genuine for all we know. It sure doesn't seem like. Well, that brings me back kind of to my point about socially acceptable grief versus what's not. Like, what do we as a society expect from people?
There's a site, a Facebook page called Grief Beyond Belief.
Yeah, actually, I was going to mention that.
It's great.
The person who runs it was at Convergence this year, and I met her there.
I know there's some connection with them and Free Thought blogs, or maybe that's just where I read about it. But they have, you can like the page, and then you can go ahead and talk about whatever grief or loss you're experiencing there, and people are encouraged to give support and prayer and God bless, and any sort of religious support is not allowed.
Awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's-
And so if you don't have anyone in your family who you can go to or that you can talk to about it, or you don't want to post about it on Facebook to your where your friends and family can see it, there's this group. There's a place for it, and there are people there, you know, to help. There's a community. It's a neat idea.
I think you know, when I think about grief and not being a believer, you know, you talk about better place, and those statements bother me, but what bothers me more than anything is when people will say to somebody who they know is a non-believer, I know you don't believe in heaven, but...
Yes.
It's like, well, you just started... You know what? You're right.
Yeah.
I don't believe in heaven, so whatever you're going to say next isn't going to help.
Yeah, it's just like people... I had an aunt say to me, Poppy would want you to blah, 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 and my response was, Poppy doesn't want anything, he's dead. And she got very upset with me.
She said, would want you.
No, she said, would want...
I think she said want.
It, whatever it was intended to be manipulative. That's all it is.
It's using someone's memory because
they're not here. I don't care. It doesn't, like, they would have wanted that. You have no way of knowing that. Like, they would want this. You don't know that. Like, and unless it just, I don't know. It bothers me when people use that as a way of, like, or when people will say, like, he's looking down on you now and he's so proud of you. And it's like, no, he's not. I mean, that's nice.
You can say, I'm sure he'd be proud of you.
Yeah, he would be proud,
Your dad would be proud of you. When my dad died, and it was 2 weeks, it took 2 weeks to get his body back.
Oh, my God.
Because he was overseas.
Right. Yeah.
So there's this long waiting process to get him back. And I didn't cry. And I felt like I was broken.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't crying about it. I was just like... I was super numb. I mean, I liked my dad a lot.
For sure.
I never had, my parents and I and my brother, we were a really tight family. We liked each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, dad dying was really traumatic.
Right.
And I couldn't figure out why I couldn't cry. I mean, I wanted to cry. I was really upset. And, at the funeral, one of the things my mom did is she had all sorts of balloons because dad liked balloons. So
that's great.
You know, the funeral ends and we all let go of the balloons as we leave the service.
Polluters.
And it was terrible.
How many animals died because they choked on those balloons?
And I was with my best friend and I just watched the balloons going away and I said, I'm going to miss him so much. And then I just started sobbing.
That's exactly what happened to me with my grandfather. Was this whole time when he was dying for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And everyone kept talking about it. My mom cried. Yeah. Everyone cried all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was a bad time for my family. That was when I was going through anorexia camp and all that stuff too. So I didn't know if it was the medicines I was on.
You can go to camp for anorexia?
It was basically anorexia, sleepaway camp. But like, it's like how they send you to Don't Be Gay camp and it's all a bunch of gay kids and you're all be like, just like intense together being gay basically. It was like, go to camp and like all like try to not worry about how fat you're getting, but you're surrounded by incredibly skinny people who are also worried about being fat. So it doesn't help. But I wasn't sure if it was the mood stabilizers or if it was something else, and I felt that same broken. Yeah. And I remember it was a source of much concern for me, because I kept saying to Nick, I don't know what's wrong with me that I can't cry, and people are noticing. My mom is noticing that I haven't cried yet. But when she called me and told me he finally died, it was the same thing, just instant. Yeah. Like I couldn't. It was
there are also.
I got to finish this story.
Okay, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
I'm crying, and my grandfather, my mom's dad, says, you know, don't cry. He wouldn't have wanted you to cry. And my answer was, I actually think he would.
Yeah.
But he didn't say it in that whole, you know, your dad's looking over you and he doesn't want you to cry.
Like, buck up.
It was not in a, you buck up, soldier. Okay. It was a very gentle, I don't want to make it sound like it was a horrible, like he was being a horrible person.
He meant it in a good, caring way,
but it was like the wrong thing to say. Yeah. Like, of course my dad would have wanted me to cry, because he would have wanted me to get that emotion out.
Of course.
Your dad wouldn't want you to be sad, and he wouldn't want bad things to happen to you. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, a parent does.
Yeah.
But... Mm-hmm. Your parents can't protect you from feeling things.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
And honestly, you know, my dad's role as a minister for half a century, working with people, because a lot of, I mean, a good minister is also a counselor to people in a large way.
Yeah, sure.
And especially he was so good with people that I feel very strongly like he would have both sides of that. And, you know, crying is part of the process.
Yeah.
But also... it's important that you remember the things that were important to you and celebrate who they were while also feeling that pain.
Yep.
True.
And that's part of it. I think that's why for me, with grief is that I have always felt like, for one, I mean, it happens. I felt that way since I was a kid. I mean, it's going to happen. You can't get over it. You cannot escape it. And it always seems silly to me to get so worked up over it, in that sense of like, it's, you know, it's not fair. It's like, well it's literally the most fair thing.
Yeah.
Everyone dies. I mean, that's it unequivocally. I mean, like, it's, and so to me, to be like, it's not fair. It's like, it's not fair to us that we're left alone, but it's fair that he died, because that's, everyone gets that, you know? And so.
And the only other thing I wanted to say, kind of jumping back to Tim and reacting, or when you cry or when you have certain things happen, the last Fearless Lab we did, I did a pre-eulogy.
Yes, you did.
Where it was a version, a different version of what I ended up doing.
Googly.
And the thing was, like, I did not get... I practiced reading through that out loud several times before the show, and I didn't get through it without crying once. And then when I got... And so I thought I was just going to lose my shit up there. And
you warned me.
Which was going to be hilarious.
Right.
That's why he warned me.
Yeah. But then being... on stage and in front of people, I think that sense of, I don't know, a sense of performance, or I don't know, it was just
adrenaline,
like
this,
I'm just
on
adrenaline
stage.
And just, and I, it didn't happen. So I had no idea, you know, how to predict what my reaction was going to be to that.
How did you do it at the service?
Fairly similar. It was, I mean, like I cried multiple times during the service,
well, sure,
but not when I gave that
and
talk. I was like,
was it well received?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was very well received. Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Excellent.
Yeah, thanks.
Well, I mean, I don't know if we've answered anything about what to do.
Well, no, that's the thing is, it's like,
is that really the point though?
I think what we've come to is that each situation obviously is different. I mean, of course with grief, but I think, you know, if you are a non-believer and you are the one grieving, I think you get to dictate the terms of that, and you just need to communicate to people, I would say, like what they you know, what you do and don't like, because at that point it's your show. But if you are trying to, I mean, when I try to offer condolences to people, it's hard, because, you know, I don't want to say like, well, he's in a better place, or this is a good thing, but I will say, like, I'm really sorry for your loss.
Yeah,
you know, anything you need.
If there's anything I can do for
any,
you.
Yeah, tangible things that I can do for you. Yeah. Like, make you food. Let's go out. Like, what do you need
and
when?
Do you need distraction?
Yeah.
Can I do any help?
I'm really bad at that. At the other people going through grief or loss and trying to be supportive, I can never find the right words. I always feel like whatever I'm saying is like... the asshole thing to say.
I wonder
like,
if anyone feels like
even
they
just
have
like
speaking
words.
Speaking as somebody who's been through that, there are no right words.
Just,
there's nothing that anybody can say that will make you feel better.
I know.
It's just if it's that feeling that somebody gives a shit about you and somebody's there for you. Yeah, that's nice.
It's good. If you're not an idiot, you're going to appreciate they're making the effort regardless of what they say.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
that's a good point. I kind of, you know, I'm sorry for your loss is kind of what I stick with more or less because I don't, I feel like if I were in that position, I wouldn't want a lot of attention or so much. When I'm going through something rough, I kind of want to be left the fuck alone, which might not be the best thing all the time.
Sure.
Right.
So it's so hard from outside of that to be trying to be supportive and try to be helpful. Yeah. And maybe I just second guess myself too much about it. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing about that. Yeah. I know it's recent and it's still, I'm glad that you were willing to come and talk about it. So,
thanks
for asking me. So, back to the comedy.
We'll see how funny it is. Okay.
Yeah. So five questions. We're gonna ask you our five questions. Are you ready?
Yes.
Are you? Are you sure?
I don't know. Well, we'll find out, won't we?
All right. Question one. What's the best movie you've seen in the last 30 days?
Okay. Convergence was within the last 30 days,
sure.
And I saw some really good films in CinemaRex because I work in CinemaRex, but. Actually, my favorite slash maybe the best film I think I've seen is that I rewatched Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind last week.
That's a really good
and
movie.
And it's so good.
Fuck, that movie is so good.
That movie kills me every time.
It does. Yeah, me too. I think it is amazing because as sort of weird and dark and fucked up as it is, I think it's an amazingly romantic film.
Oh, it's very romantic.
You know, and I think it's one of the best films it's one of the best performances Jim Carrey's ever done because he's so understated and straightforward, and Kate Winslet's fabulous, and I think it's the best of any of the Charlie Kaufman written films that I've seen.
Yeah.
And I found out in part because Michel Gondry, as director, really kind of twisted certain things or really shifted how some of the things were portrayed in subtle ways that really read better than what was on the page.
Sure. That's excellent.
Have you seen the trailer for The Secret Life of Walter Mitty?
I just saw that this weekend.
Ben Stiller.
Is doing it again?
It's the critics who have seen it, the movie they're drawing the most comparison to is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, but it's Ben Stiller. It seems to be just a guy who is off in his own little world.
He works for Life magazine, it looks like.
And he daydreams a lot, and they act out all his daydreams with,
seamless,
lots of CGI and, he's, transported to other worlds and then brought back when people are like, hey, what are you thinking about, man?
It's not also Michel Gondry, as far as
No,
you know.
I don't think I don't think so. But it does look very surreal and beautiful in that same way.
Okay.
I saw that trailer, and I mean, it looks like an interesting movie, and I will go see it, but I leaned over, and I said to my wife after the trailer played, Ben Stiller wants an Oscar.
Man. Question two.
Who is your favorite atheist character?
So, I believe I've listened to every episode of this podcast.
You got one up on
me, then. Of course you haven't listened to it. Given that a lot of characters have been brought up, and I don't really, I don't obsess about atheist characters in general. So I really looked up a list of atheist characters just
specifics.
To see, and flip through would something jump out that I haven't thought of before. And Lindsay Weir from Freaks and Geeks.
Oh.
Because I adore that show.
Is that...
Linda Cardellini.
Yeah.
And
you have the biggest man crush ever on Linda Cardellini. This I know.
She's super hot.
She is.
I have a man crush on her. That's how much of a crush I have on her.
He went to see Scooby-Doo just because she was in it.
She was fucking hot in Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, totally. But I think the show's really fun. And they don't really do much with her being an atheist at all, but it's something that's touched on briefly, I just really enjoy the character.
Her parents yell at her about it, kind of comes up or something.
But since it's something that hasn't been mentioned before, it's a show that I adore. I thought that was this the thing that came to mind when I was flipping through a list.
There's nothing more nerdy than liking a show that gets canceled after one season.
Yeah, not even a full season.
Okay, so question number three: what is your geekiest hobby? Come on, you've listened to every episode.
I know.
I don't know the answer to these questions.
Does sewing qualify?
Yes. Well, okay. There's something geekier about the fact that you sew, I feel.
There's a way geekier bit about it.
The fact that your Renaissance Festival character used to be Eric the Tailor. And you do costume stuff for people sometimes.
I used to sew professionally. I made costumes for other people. And also, I'm one of probably only a few people in the world who's ever made multiple costumes for an inflatable dinosaur.
for Rex?
Yeah. Over the years, there was like, there's several things. Like, Jedi robes. Neo from The Matrix.
I remember that.
Including the cape. The coat.
The trench coat. Yeah.
Not cape, but coat with like the little, and
multiple
and,
Star Trek outfits.
The Gorn.
The Gorn
from Marina and Spock in Amok Time.
Oh, all right.
So, you know, there's been several iterations of Rex as something.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
You know, and so
I think I make costumes for an inflatable dinosaur.
To be fair, it's been a lot of years, but still, it's happened.
We'll allow it.
Yes, that's definitely allowed. Yeah. All right. Question four. What is your favorite sandwich?
So I'm doner kebab.
Ooh.
And it is something that you, it's okay, so
it's gyro meat.
It's like gyro meat, but so I have had this over in Germany when I've gone over for work, which I don't get to do anymore. It's basically like gyros, except better, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like the sauce they put on it is spicy and zesty, and they'll sprinkle, like, you know, chili powder on there too, and it's just like, because like I'm not a big fan, I don't like raw cucumber, and the cucumber
like the
sauce
yeah.
It's like, if they don't put too much of it, it's okay on gyros.
You specifically don't like the flavor of cucumbers.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is like gyros, but like five times better. And it's one of my favorite things.
Interesting.
So what's it called again?
Doner kebab.
Well, doner kebab is the name. Okay, so that's the name of what the meat is on the spit. So that's just...
But when you go get... You know, when you just go order doner in Germany, you get a pocket bread with the meat and lettuce and stuff.
Is it on a stick? Is it on a kebab?
No. They actually put it in. Yeah.
So it's probably called that because it's roasted on a stick.
On the spit or whatever. Yeah. I don't know why, but I've had it. I had it several times in Germany.
Delicious.
It's so good. In fact, once I actually had it for dinner, got a second one, put it in the fridge in the hotel so I could have it for lunch the next day in the fall. And I'm sitting there, I pull it out and I start eating it. And Heiko from our German partner company looks at me, he's like, what are you eating? And I'm like, doner kebab. He said, where'd you get that? I'm like, I bought it last night. You're eating it cold? He was like so horrified. And I'm like,
I'm an American fat piece of shit. I just eat what I want.
But there's food here. I'm like, Heiko, this tastes better than anything I can get here anywhere in the hall, even cold.
And
he like grudgingly accepted that, but still couldn't quite handle
it. That's awesome.
When Chipotle's were first starting to pop up around the Twin Cities, you know, they do the show up at Halloween dressed as a burrito
and get a
free burrito. So my best friend and I did the rounds and drove around the Twin Cities and hit every single... Chipotle.
Oh my god.
And we walked away with like a cooler full of Chipotle burritos.
Oh my god.
And so like that was what we ate for like a week. Was like, two burritos a day and I'm good for 4 days. Like,
Jesus Christ.
We're set. But it was like,
God, I love Chipotle, but
it's weird that you're fat.
How did that happen?
But like, you know, it was delicious. It was perfect. Yeah. It was what we wanted.
Sure. Well, you were poor punks living off your salaries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Driving around all the Chipotles without insurance and a beat up car with brakes that didn't work. Yeah. So our fifth and final question is, what's the stupidest comment you've received about your atheism?
So I haven't really had that many things come up specifically like, oh, you're an atheist, blah, blah, blah. You know, that kind of blatant, stupid stuff. But the one thing that comes to mind in going back to recent stuff and with my dad and all of that is that on the recent visit for the memorial, the last night I was there, I was chatting with one of my brothers and my sister, and I don't remember exactly how this came up, but my sister said she was going to go see a psychic. And I said, because you want to throw money away? And she was like, you know, well, yeah. What do you mean? And I offered her, I was like, I will give you $5 if you don't go see a psychic. And she was like, $5, that's not much. Like, who cares? And I'm like, no, you don't get it. You're ahead $5 from me. You're ahead all the money you would have paid to somebody who's full of shit.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, win-win, okay? Yeah. And so in the course of this, but what was interesting, it actually led to the conversation with the three of us delving more into it because there's, you know, my brother, who I think is very level-headed, told me some interesting things about when he was in Japan. And, like, there are a lot of people who really firmly believe that there are ghosts and other stuff.
Oh, yeah, Japan. there's a whole lot of shit over there, yeah.
There's a lot of it. And he said, you know, the thing that he was basically saying, you know, in sort of a weird skeptic, but not one way or the other, in the middle ground way, was like, I don't know, because, I mean, I've had people who were, like, super level-headed and described a situation and everything seemed, and I'm like, yeah, but I think that, I think people are deluding themselves, or maybe this guy who thinks that he was awake,
you know, like,
unreliable narrator. Thing.
Right, you know, and there's a lot of those kinds of things. But so the thing that really made me laugh was, you know, and I said in the course of this conversation, the thing is, in all of this time, with technology getting more and more developed, or people trying to take pictures of ghosts, all these different things, there is no tangible evidence that anybody can really point to that says, yes, this is the case.
Yeah. No one's measured it.
There is no way to do this. And my sister said, well, so what if somebody does come up with a way to do that? Are you, you know, what are you going to say then? And I was like,
I was wrong.
Yeah.
Big freaking deal. Like, I was like, that's how science works. Yeah. If it turns out that you're wrong, you're like, oh, I guess I was wrong.
Yeah. Sweet.
Like,
I guess
cool
the
evidence,
moves, yeah.
That's
I guess
great.
The Earth moves around the sun. Well, we can stop murdering people.
Shoo. Good deal there.
Right. That's the part that I found more amusing to me than anything was just the, it was almost like, well, you know, what if somebody proves you wrong? Then I'll say I was wrong.
And it's like, but that doesn't go with what they think of as with us and us non-believers and skeptics. They think that we are, you know, atheism's just another religion and you guys are just as bad because you're blind adherence to science and all that.
There's an episode of Big Bang Theory where Penny's going to go see a psychic and Leonard is just, saying, making fun of her because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the whole episode is about him not being a supportive boyfriend. I'm like, no! The only problem is that he's making fun of her instead of giving her the evidence to say, no, this is a really bad idea. You're throwing away your money.
Yep.
Psychics are shams.
If she says, I sense a spirit around you, has someone recently passed? Say, you tell me. don't answer. That's what they're doing. That's how it works.
Guesser.
Exactly.
What's going
on? Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, Eric, very much. We had Eric Knight here with us, and Ericksonville, and
other
random things. And
when is this going up?
You can see him at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
He is the concierge. You can see him at the front gate of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival in the mornings and in the evenings.
Yep.
And then also on the Bear stage.
Doing an adequate job. Yep.
He's first round funny.
We should reiterate on Facebook, Grief Beyond Belief.
Yes.
Is the name of the Facebook group.
Absolutely.
And that's a great resource for atheists who are dealing with grief.
And please, if you have any, you know, questions, comments, as always, you know, leave comments on our site here, and you can also send them into us. Please send your answers to r5questions@geeksithoutgod.com, and we always welcome you to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, tweet at us, Facebook at us, I don't know, whatever.
Talk to
us. Oh my God, please pay attention to us. Do we have any fans?
Validate me.
Alright, thanks.
Jesus,
guys,
I didn't know you were so desperate.
I'm pretty desperate. Alright. Thanks guys, thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'm very sorry for your loss of the last 45 minutes of your life.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Listen to past podcasts and catch us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. Follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod and like our Facebook page, Geeks Without God.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
I go to church. Yeah. I sing the song.
So,